Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Up and running for another week. Welcome, everybody. Thank you guys for hanging out, tuning in, downloading, streaming, whatever you do. Appreciate you connecting and listening to the Eddie Trunk Podcast each and every week, which we have new episodes of on Thursday. Always free to download or stream via podcastone.com or iTunes. Hope everybody had a great week. I was in Milwaukee last weekend on my latest adventures. Had a chance to host shows with Saxon and Black Star Riders, who are both opening for Judas Priest, but are breaking off on nights off from the Priest tour doing their own dates, and it was good to do that. I did a really cool thing there. The casino and promoter had me come out and do a Q&A with the band members before they played as sort of the opening of the show. A lot of fun, interesting idea, something a little bit different, and it was cool to do. I did the Q&A with Scott Gorham, who, of course, is also one of the classic members of Thin Lizzy, and Ricky Warwick, who sings in Black Star Riders, and with Biff from Saxon. So the three band members and myself were out there on the stage, and we had a good time, and it was a good opportunity to do something a little bit different. Maybe something I'll get to do more of in the future is kind of doing a little interview, talking to the acts before they take the stage. It was a nice touch, good idea by Bob Rock and the good guys there over at the Pottawatomie Casino in Milwaukee. I thank them for having me. And thanks to everybody that I talked to. A lot of interesting stuff, too, talking to the two bands. Spent a lot of time talking to them off the stage, backstage, and a lot of interesting information. I always like talking to Scott Gorham because, obviously, he's a member of the classic lineup of Thin Lizzy. So he's got stories for days. But Scott and I were talking about all kinds of stuff, including just how weird it is about bands that are incredibly popular in like England. And Scott Gorham, even though he was born in America and lived half of his life in California, he has lived in London for like the last 30 years. And Scott was just, we were talking about like Thin Lizzy and their standing in America and how different it is than other parts of the world. Where in America, Thin Lizzy is basically thought of as a one-hit wonder, which is crazy to people who live in England and Europe. And Ricky Warwick was telling me that a guy like Gary Moore, Ricky is from Dublin, that Gary Moore has statues of him up in Ireland. And then a band like T-Rex, one-hit wonder in America, but gods over in England. Slade and Status Quo, not a blip on the radar in the U.S., but super popular over there. So we're having an interesting conversation about a lot of stuff like that backstage and some other things that have to stay off the record right now. But I can tell you that Scott did tell me there will be more Thin Lizzy dates coming up, that he does a version of Thin Lizzy that he puts together and plays all the Lizzy songs, which is a lot of fun. And Scott said a new band and a new lineup of some new dates will be coming, including shows in the U.S. So Thin Lizzy with that amazing catalog, that'll be something to look forward to. I'll share more information with you about that when I can. If you're listening to this on post day, which again is Thursday, the 12th of April. Tomorrow is a crazy day for me. I begin it in Cleveland, broadcasting from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on Volume, Sirius XM 106. Tomorrow they're turning the channel on its head a little bit because it's going to be wall-to-wall coverage of the Hall of Fame. The inductions for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame go down on Saturday, and Volume's going to be covering much of it, and I will be in Cleveland from Thursday night until Friday doing the broadcast in the morning, 9 a.m. till 12 noon, I'll be on doing some coverage and broadcasting from right inside the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum in Cleveland. And a number of people have asked me if this is something that's open to the public, and I'm told that it is, and you'll be able to find us and see the broadcast. In the morning, it's going to be myself, Lori and Nick, who do the morning show on Volume called Feedback, and also Gary Delabate from the Howard Stern Show. So that's going to be the morning broadcast team, 9 a. till 12 noon from the Hall of Fame in Cleveland. Join us for the action if you have Sirius XM on 106 Volume. And then from there, I get right to the airport and fly to Tulsa, where that same night, this Friday night, I'll host LA Guns at the IDL Ballroom. So that should be really cool. What an adventure it's going to be for me this coming Friday. And then I hang around in Tulsa for a couple days, do some radio from there, and then headed to Houston, Proof Rooftop Lounge, where I'm hosting Tom Kiefer on the 22nd. And just added, on the 23rd in Houston, White Oak Music Hall, I'll be doing my Sirius XM show, Trunk Nation, live on Volume from the White Oak Music Hall, Monday, April 23rd, 1 to 3 Central Time live. So if you're in the Houston area, come by and watch the show. It won't cost you a penny to do so. Maybe I'll put you on the air. We'll do a little free-for-all Monday, again, April 23rd for that. Rocklahoma's coming up. They've just added, Rocklahoma's coming up Memorial Weekend. M3 coming up even sooner. And that is, they've just added some bands there in Columbia, Maryland. And that, of course, is the first weekend of May. And the Ride for Ronnie coming up in Encino, California, May 6th. All for the Dio Cancer Fund, which I'll also be hosting. So tons of stuff going on. Please keep an eye on my website, eddietrunk.com. All the details and information there. Follow on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Eddie Trunk. Speaking of live broadcasts, the interview that I have for you, and as I always tell you, what you hear on this podcast interview-wise is just a small sample of what I do on a daily basis on my daily talk show on Sirius XM Channel 106 Volume, which you can hear live 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, replaying every night 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. That show is called Trunk Nation, and it is nothing but talk and interviews about music. And I do that show from remote locations. As I just mentioned, I'll be doing it from Houston on the 23rd. I got shows coming up from Tulsa as well. And I recently did some shows from Dallas. And King Diamond lives in Dallas. And I was able to get King Diamond to come over and do the broadcast with me and do an interview with me when I was in Dallas. And it was great to see him. He's an interesting guy. There are people that, you know, like Metallica, for instance, I mean, they absolutely love Merciful Fate and King Diamond. A guy like Mark Tremonti, the same thing. I mean, they have their fans. King Diamond has built a huge career. And, you know, I don't like everything he does musically. His voice is a bit of an acquired taste, but he's an interesting guy. I mean, you listen to him and he's so much fun to talk to. He's got so many great stories. I know that he can be a bit controversial in his beliefs, which people don't fully understand sometimes, but just a pretty iconic figure as far as metal is concerned, who's been doing it for a very, very, very long time. So I got a lot of respect for what he does, and he's, like I said, always a fascinating interview. And when this originally aired a few weeks ago on Sirius XM, I got a tremendous amount of positive reaction to this interview. So I'm glad that I can bring it to you now for you guys, listeners of the Eddie Trunk podcast around the world. So coming up in a matter of minutes, King Diamond, and hasn't been doing much press, but he talks about a new record. He talks about a new tour. He talks about his earliest years. He talks about being a kid coming up in Denmark, some of the acts that he saw that really influenced him. I think whether you're a fan of his music or not, I think you're going to find this interview pretty interesting and entertaining. At least I hope you do. Also, quick note, brand new Trunk Nation t-shirt just released in time for the spring and summer. Very cool sort of flaming microphone design. Check it out. Merch store on eddietrunk.com. Hit that. And you'll see the brand new design, brand new t-shirt just released for the 2018 summer. Have a look for that. They'll also be available at M3 and also at Rocklahoma at the merch booths, but you can mail away for one right now. Just go to the merch store, see all the merch, including the new shirt there, on eddietrunk.com. While you're there, all my appearances, there's a ton of them on the homepage, the blog, which is the Trunk Report. Email me through the site, sign copies of my books. It's all there for you on my website. Final note, July 1st, important date, mark it on your calendars. If you have Access TV, and that is spelled AXS on your channel grids, I have a brand new show starting July 1st. It'll premiere on the 1st of July, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, Trunk Fest, me covering music festivals. Hope you guys watch it. Hope you enjoy it. Very excited about this. Very excited you'll finally get a chance to check it out. Trunk Fest, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, July 1st on Access TV is the debut. Mark it. Get ready. More when we get a little bit closer. King Diamond standing by, an interview that I did with him from the Guitar Sanctuary in McKinney, Texas. And I think you're really going to love this. It's coming up next on the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, you guys, do you know that sexual performance issues, they are more common than you think? Check this stat out. Over 25% of new ED, that's erectile dysfunction cases, are in guys under 40. That's right. It is. It's not a problem just for old guys anymore. And you can help. You can get a lot of help here. We got some solutions for you right now. And that solution is 4hymns.com. Because 4hymns.com is a one-stop place for guys' problems, hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness, just for men. And thanks to science, the problem of ED can be optional. Hymns will connect you with real doctors with medical-grade solutions to ED. No snake oil, no trying to go in a store and buy something that you don't even know if it's legit. Nobody trying to sell you stuff on late night commercials, no waiting room, no awkward doctor's visits. It's easy. You answer a few quick questions, you chat with a doctor for a confidential review, and the products are shipped directly to your door. No in-person doctor's visit is required, not anymore. Erectile dysfunction without the dysfunction. Try Hims for a month today for just $5. You'll get started for just $5 while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. You want this deal? Easy. Go to 4hymns.com/trunked. That's 4hymns. You ready for this? forhims.com/trunked. T-R-U-N-K. My last name with E-D at the end. One more time so you got it right. 4hymns.com, forhims.com/trunk, T-R-U-N-K-E-D. 4hymns.com/trunk-E-D. Go there. Check it out. 4hymns.
What's it like for you watching games of your son coaching?
Agonizing.
It's a family affair on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
You know, I didn't know there was actual work here.
Recent guests include Rich Eisen, John Harbaugh, Judge Judy, and John Madden.
I thought one of the greatest jobs in coaching in the NFL was Jim's first year with the 49ers.
Exclusively on Podcast One Sportsnet. Get episodes every Tuesday on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts.
Great time to be a Wolverine.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, let's get into it on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast. We go to the Guitar Sanctuary in McKinney, Texas, where I was joined just a couple weeks ago by King Diamond. Enjoy.
How are you, man?
Doing good, absolutely.
You're looking good? You're feeling good? The last time we had you on that metal show, you were telling us about all the health ailments and stuff you had endured to get better. How you feeling with all that?
Feel good. I mean, it's we've been touring and touring since, you know, and working on a new album later this year. It'll be writing and recording for a brand new studio album, King Diamond. And we are finishing up the DVD at the moment. So we've been working on that for a while. I'm sure a lot of people are wondering why it has taken so long, but it's like a double Blu-ray DVD, you know, and there's two full concerts on it. But it's the way we recorded it, the way it's been edited, that is very unique. I don't think our fans will have seen anything like it ever before.
How so? What's the goal?
The two concerts are, there's Grass Pop, so that's big festival, you know, with a big production. They both have the same production actually, but it's a big place, of course, with 30,000 or 40,000 people. The other show is from Philadelphia, and some clips have also been taken and used from Detroit. But that was indoor theater show, you know, so it's very different. But on the entire tour, both tours, we recorded ourselves, 9 GoPros every night.
Wow.
On the tour, placed different places in a coffin, on the lanterns we hold and use around the grandma's wheelchair had a thing on it, you know, on guitars, on just railings, and it was everywhere. You know, we didn't even know where they were until afterwards. We would get surprised and say, "Oh wow, there's one of these again." So they had a lot of this. You can imagine
really unique angles, I would think, right?
Because you'll never see them from other bands, because you would have to have a guy standing with a camera,
right?
You know? And there was 25 shows that we did it to. And then the two shows that they did with 9 pro cameras on top of it, you know. So, but we had all these other angles multiplied by 9, 25 shows. I mean,
the editing must be taking forever, though, because the more cameras and you have to, that's the more footage you have to look at, right?
That's the deal. And we are 98% done with the Philadelphia show, and it has blown my way. I can't, every time I watch a few songs from it, I see new things I didn't see before, because there is so much. It's as if you were given a 10x VIP pass, but you would still not see all that, even if you stood there and saw it for yourself. Because I'll suddenly be walked second floor across the bridge straight towards you, you know. Or the actress has a lantern in her hand, and it's the one that's filming me coming towards her. It's crazy angles, you know. It's really interesting.
So you have two completely separate shows that you're going to put out like this on DVD?
Yeah.
And so one is Philadelphia.
And the other is Grass Pop.
Which is in where, Sweden?
That's Belgium.
Belgium.
Belgium Outdoor Festival, big one. There's also some clips from Hellfest mixed into it here and there for having more angles even.
So, right. And this is from the most recent touring you did?
Yeah, 2016 in Europe and 2015 over here in the U.S.,
Was it already too?
It's crazy.
That long ago that you did the U.S. stuff?
It's crazy.
Because I remember, you know, not being able to make your show. I know you did your show in New York, and I remember I was bummed I couldn't get there. But I know that you did a lot of shows, and I know the shows were really big, and you brought your full production into everything. I mean, people were raving about what you were doing. And then you went all over the world with that?
Yeah. I mean, we went now when we start again here, there's so much that has happened for us that is really, really cool. So we are finishing this off. It'll come out this year for sure, you know, and it will be very, very unique. As soon as it's done, I mean, Andy LaRocca is coming here to Frisco. As soon as the DVD is finished, you know, it'll be a matter of 2-3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's showing up here to initiate my home studio where I'm going to do all the vocals. It's complete.
For another record?
Yeah, for a brand new King Diamond studio album.
And is the music done yet?
The music is not done yet. That's what we're going to start writing.
So you work with Andy.
But my storyline is about 80% done.
Can you reveal where you're going with it or not yet?
Rather not. But it's, okay. There's some very unique things I'm putting into it this time where you will relate to some of the sounds you hear on it, because it's sounds that you will hear on certain days in your own life or your private life, you know, you're outdoors or whatever, and you might hear certain sounds, and you will guaranteed think, if you heard the album, say, wonder if that thing King talked about could have happened when I heard that sound here. Because it has, I shouldn't say so much, but I want to talk about it, you know. I've told our new management. King Diamond has a management for the first time in our entire career.
Oh, Slagle must be happy.
I think he is. So I was actually the one asking him for if he had somebody that could help a little bit with all the statement calculations, because it really started to fend me up, you know. And he said, yeah, I think I might have someone. And then he put us in contact with, I didn't know who he had in mind. And suddenly we were having meetings with some management, and we signed up with 5B Management, which is
Corey and those guys, Corey and Bob, I know those. Those are great. Yeah. It's a big company, man.
Yeah,
so that's
much.
Great to have that sort of stuff behind you. They got Slipknot and...
Megadeth, Stone Sour, Trivium. I think they have a bunch of very, very cool bands. So, so we'll be... they're already working now on with our super booking agents, which are also major AGI, you know, Mike Laughlin and Nick Storch.
Mm-hmm.
Who are working on the big festivals over in Europe for 2019, and then there will be, everywhere.
So you went through so much to with your health when you were on that metal show. We talked about it with your heart and everything that you had heart surgery and all the things you've gone through.
Yeah.
This tour that you're documenting on this DVD, that was really the first big undertaking you did since all your health stuff, right?
Yes.
How did you feel? How did you feel every night going out there around the world and playing? Because it was the first time you did it since everything.
Up and down the stairs to the second floor. You know, I mean, doing everything that I would normally do. I'm careful. You have to be careful when you're up and down these stairs, you know. But it went absolutely well. I mean, I'm in pretty good shape.
Did you go through any sort of training? I mean, you look great physically. I mean, did you do anything different in terms of
make sure
you had your wind and make sure you're able to sing and move?
I walk a lot. I do what the doctors have told me, and that is walk 4 times a week for 1.5 miles. And so walk fast there. And it doesn't matter what the weather is like. I know my wife doesn't like so much when it gets hot and clammy here. Sometimes it does, you know.
Humid, yeah.
That's what I love because it gives me that extra challenge, you know, I get through that stuff. I get through any show, you know. So it's a lot of that stuff and stay in shape. And then singing in my home studio, you know, a lot to keep in shape, be ready to do the shows when they come. The worst for me as a singer is that I'm the one in the entire band that gets the least oxygen. Because, you know, I take a big breath and then I have to sing and let it out while that breath is lasting before I can take my next breath. The others can, you know, and be playing. You know?
Right.
So it's that's a challenge there, you know. But there was a couple of shows where we had what do you call those? It was medical people, but they were not. They were there for just...
EMTs, emergency medical guys.
Yeah, they're just there.
They were there to watch the show, but it was good to have them there just in case.
Exactly. You're thinking like, you know, hey, you never know. But they actually, at one show, measured me and my blood oxygen and stuff like that, and they were very surprised, you know, how great it went. So I stay healthy, you know. I drink the right things. I'm totally hydrated nowadays also. I make sure that I'm...
For people that don't know and didn't know the story, you had open heart surgery.
Yeah.
And did you actually have a heart attack or you almost had one?
It was a heart attack. Right?
You did have a heart attack, right?
Yeah.
And then did you have to be revived from that?
No.
Did you lose consciousness or?
No. They took me to the hospital. Hospital was about 2 minutes from my house. So I can see when we take our walks.
Were you here in Texas? You were home when it happened.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. At least you're
It was
nearby.
Very good. Yeah. So it's it was strange coming in there, and then suddenly they check you up. They had to go in with a camera, you know, and up and look at the heart inside through the veins and all that. And they came back and said, "Okay, that little thing went well. You're semi alert during the whole thing." And then they said, "But it doesn't look good up there. We have to go in and do a triple bypass." And like, okay, what is this? The next day, I'm signing papers for all kinds of stuff if I die. And
Sure.
All that stuff. It suddenly reality hits you very hard in the face, you know. And as soon as
what did they say was the cause? You smoked for a long time, right?
I smoked for a long time, yes. But that, of course, is a reason. But just as big a reason was the hereditary stuff, right?
You have a family history of heart disease?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do too. I mean, as we get older, you got to keep up with that stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
And you look at your family history stuff, and that's the best indicator that could dictate what you should and shouldn't be, you know, doing and trying to do, and what your family history is a big, big factor.
I was lucky with a very, very skilled surgeon that did it, and now I have I wouldn't want to live without this guy. My Dr. Klein is my cardiologist now. And he brings me in every 4 months when we're out touring and stuff like that because he wants to see that I'm doing all right.
Maybe he's a metal fan. Is he a metal fan?
Well, he you know what? The funny thing is, the first day I came into his office and we started talking, I told him I play music and it has to do with horror and all this stuff, you know. And then he said, horror, wow, the most horror song I've ever heard was DOA with Blood Rock, you know, who are from Texas. And they said, have you ever heard
No.
this song? It is creepy. It is so creepy. And I said, are you kidding me? You know Blood Rock? I mean, he came and visited
only
us one day.
You would find a metal cardiologist.
And now he loves what we're doing, you know. And he brought the original single of that song, DOA, to my house.
But wait, he didn't. He's into metal and he did not know Merciful Fate or King Diamond before?
No, he didn't. No, not. He likes what we're doing. He might not have been into metal right, as such, but okay. He liked Blood Rock. He liked... a lot of different music. He believes very strongly also that music has a very healing power,
uh-huh.
And would love to be able to create something more. You know, he has birthday the same day as me. It's
oh
pretty
my
amazing.
Gosh! It's kind of surreal that you've actually survived all this in some ways.
Yeah, it. I don't live a day without thinking about death. I simply don't. You know, I mean, I can't take for granted that I wake up tomorrow. I'm glad when I do, but it's something I have to live with, you know, and it is weird. It's not as bad as it was right after the operation when we started actually taking walks, me and my wife, where I had to have confirmed from her that I was actually there. I would touch her shoulder and say, you feel this, right? Or I would fall asleep in a chair and I would wake up in a nightmare, you know, and she would be there, hey, it's okay. And I'd be like, what? I'm here, right? It was very, very strange. I felt like in some ways that I... didn't deserve to be here for some reason.
Well, let me ask you about that. Did that change your views on anything? I mean, people know you are. I mean, we've talked about this before. Your views on religion and things like that. This having this near death experience and surviving, and you said to yourself, you said just a few seconds ago, you're like, why did I survive? Has it changed anything in your thinking at all?
No. Nothing at all. It really hasn't.
And I think there's a lot of people misconstrue a lot about what you stand for and your image and everything that you've done in your music. So for clarification purposes, what do you believe? Like you said, you think about death all the time. What do you personally believe when you die?
About when I die, you know, I don't have a religious belief as such. I don't have a book or anything else to hold onto and get let's say knowledge from that for me that doesn't work.
I think it's interesting you live in Texas, by the way, which is a church
see,
on every
that's
corner.
Funny. People say that a lot. You know, how could you live in the Bible? I don't even see the Bibles around here. It's like,
no, but you driving here, I passed 15 churches on the parkway alone.
That I noticed, you know, and I think churches are beautiful, you know. I mean, yeah. It's like, I love the architecture. I love to be in them too, you know, for looking around and seeing how they were created. So it's not like that, but...
So suddenly,
when I die, I believe that I will see, in some way, my parents and my cats and the beloved ones that I have lost. I believe I will see in some shape or form. It can't be like they sit there as a burden. It could be. I don't know, but that doesn't matter. I'm sure I will recognize them. But that's not a thing to form a religion around, if you know what I mean.
But you know there's that thing, and I mentioned this to you on the TV show too, people say they have what they call deathbed conversions, where they think they're almost going to die,
and
they don't believe in anything, and all of a sudden they recover, and they're like,
I better do
right,
now.
They hold a Bible above their head the rest of their life. For you, you're still, how would you describe what you are? Would it be agnostic? What would you say?
If I see suddenly someone when I'm on my deathbed that's standing with a pitchfork and haunting his head, maybe I will think about
that's
it.
You. But,
so
that's who's coming for you.
yeah. So, but he already has my soul. So, what does he want, right?
Yeah, but the big change in your life that happened in the last year not religion, but this is to me the most powerful thing that can happen to anybody. And you've had your first child.
Yeah.
So congratulations to you and your wife.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, Byron. Yeah, it's
1 year old boy.
Yeah,
he's 1 year old.
Just turned 1 year.
You got your hands full? Is how do you like him being a father?
It's awesome. He's so amazing. I mean, absolutely. It is amazing, you know. So it gives you there's a lot of things that give you more inspiration for continuing doing what you're doing, you know. I want to go out and play more shows. 2019 seems like we will be playing more shows than we might have ever played in a year in our career. And that has a lot to do with new management and great booking agents and, you know, record label. Everybody around is really doing a great job of trying to put a whole lot of things together that would never have been possible the way we were doing things up till now, where we have done everything ourselves, you know. I know 5B was very surprised that we had gotten to where we were without having
right.
a management ever. We've had to learn the hard way all the time, you know, but it's nice to have the knowledge. And now it's great to see some people that have the power to open doors that we cannot open ourselves.
Going back to being a dad, you told me you named your son Byron.
Yes.
And explain after who?
Definitely inspired by David Byron, my favorite singer of all times. Uriah Heep's old singer, who is not with us anymore, but...
Uriah Heep, they were one of your favorite bands?
Absolutely. I saw them 6 times with David Byron in Copenhagen.
Wow. See, that's an interesting, because I was telling you before, they're currently on tour now in America
right.
with the current lineup.
Yeah.
But Uriah Heep were never that impactful in America compared to what they meant, I think, in other parts of the world,
yeah.
in Europe and stuff.
Yeah.
They were a big band for you growing up in Denmark?
Very much so. They were the same as Deep Purple, actually.
Really? Did they draw as many people? Were they as popular as Deep Purple?
Deep Purple would play the KB Hall where Lars Ulrich was his first show. I was there too, you know. Which is, I can't remember how many people that helped, but Uriah Heep would play the Falconer Theatre or Tivoli's Concert Hall, which is almost the same size, you know. So very, very popular, absolutely, you know. Back then you would see Slade, Geordie. I saw Geordie
several Brian
times
Johnson.
With Brian Johnson there twice.
Wow.
So that was very interesting too, you know, before he ever joined AC/DC. And I mean, UFO, you love UFO, you know.
Yeah.
And I saw back when they had just released No Heavy Petting. I hadn't heard the album at the point at that time, but it was amazing. I never saw Michael Schenker's face during the whole concert because he was just standing bent over his Flying V, and the hair
Long
was
hair.
In front of yeah, just that's all I saw. But it was amazing to see them, you know. And so I would go to all the concerts back then. I have Thin Lizzy's autographs, you know, that I showed to the fans one day too, and on a piece of paper, which is actually the flyer from a Blue Oyster Cult concert.
Oh my gosh!
I saw them at a Blue Oyster Cult concert. 4 days after, I think, that I saw them playing Hard Rock Cafe in Copenhagen. Then I went to see Blue Oyster Cult at this Tivoli's Concert Hall. And there in the bar was all Thin Lizzy. And that's where I got the autographs. So I had them sign on the back of this Blue Oyster Cult. What is it, like a discography kind of like? So very interesting.
Going back to having, I want to talk to you about some of the early days in Denmark too, and we're going to take some of the calls as well. But real quick, going back to your son, having a child, this is your first, right?
Yeah.
So at this point in your life, this late in your life,
yeah.
did your health scare have anything to do with the fact that you thought it would be good to have a child now too? The idea of having...
We've always loved children, you know, but it's always been like, yeah, well, we can't have it now with all the business. We're always
touring
traveling.
Musician,
and, all
right.
like, and then it became like, you know what? To hell with that. It's got to happen.
People
and if
find
it's gotta
a way
happen,
to make it work.
It's now.
Right.
Absolutely. He was 6 weeks old. 6 weeks old when he was in Mexico City for a show there.
Wow.
So he was there, and then he went with us to Brazil, Sao Paulo, and then he went to Santiago, Chile, and Las Vegas.
Have you put the King Diamond makeup on him yet?
Yes. No. No. No.
And a little bassinet he's got the makeup on. You know, because there's fans that probably envision that baby being born with the makeup already on,
of
right?
Of course, of course. And I already made him a little human bone microphone.
Oh, my God, it's funny stuff. All right, you have a little more time for us?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Thank you so much. We want to talk more with King Diamond. There's a lot of other things I want to get into. We were talking about your early years coming up and growing up in Denmark. And what was the first band you ever saw?
Very first concert was, I think I was 14, it was Grand Funk Railroad with Mutt de Hoople as support. Grand Funk had recorded a double live album at the Atlanta Pop Festival in 1970. And I think it was the year after they came to Europe and toured that exact same album.
And what was that? I imagine that made a big impact. Was that a big thing and impactful thing on you wanting to be a musician? Or were you already on your way before that?
No, I was not on my way before that. I just loved music before that, but this was my the first time my parents let me go to a concert on my own.
Uh-huh.
I was totally I with one friend, you know, same age.
Right.
And it was, can you imagine how loud? They were extra loud at that time. There was so much PA in that place called the KB Hall. And in Denmark, unbelievable. It was so loud. I had barely any hearing in school for the next week, you know. It was really serious, and it had a huge impact. And then I started going to other concerts. I used to spend all my allowance on that and vinyl, you know.
And when did it hit you that as a kid that you wanted to do that for a living, that you wanted to be a musician, that you could sing and wanted to sing?
Well, see, I didn't even know anything about singing. It was a secondary thing. Hearing Led Zeppelin, one and two, I wanted to make that sound Jimmy Page was making.
Were you playing guitar?
That was the first thing. I saved up for a guitar, and I went in and I bought a guitar and came back, and it didn't sound at all like Jimmy Page guitar. and some friendly neighbor that knew electronics told me that you need an amp and a distortion pedal and a speaker to make that sound, and I had no clue. So it was like I was starting from complete scratch, not knowing anything. I had made, this is ridiculous, my first guitar was actually, because I had a reel-to-reel tape recorder that I would record things on. And I had a piece of wood, and there was two nails in, and between them was an elastic band. And you could actually, by moving the finger on it, and I recorded that stupid stuff, you know. And I would sit with a pencil and bang on something, you know, and record them. And it was a four track, you know. So
guitar was your first love. That was the thing.
Yeah.
So do you still play a lot of guitar?
I write at least 2/3 of all King Diamond's music, and half, maybe not half of Merciful Fate, but lately half of Merciful Fate, you know, in the later years. But in the beginning, I wrote Come to the Sabbath and Don't Break the Oath and Gypsy and so on. So
was it difficult for you when did you decide you were going to embrace being the front man and being the singer versus guitar? Do you play a lot of other instruments besides guitar as well? Or
I can't read music. I never could. I know what an E and an A is, but it pretty much stops there. You know, when the guitarist, I show them what it is I've written, you know, and Andy will pick it out pretty much always, you know. But
right.
Sometimes somebody says, what on earth is that you're playing there? And I show him, like, oh, okay, I see. Because he has to record the things, you know. He's much better than me, you know. So, but I play keyboards. I played a lot of keyboards on the albums too, you know, and a little bit of guitar here and there. Sometimes there comes a thing I've done where I have a weird finger position, and it can be a little tricky to do it sometimes. And sometimes Andy will say, why don't you just do it, you know? I mean, it's much easier and faster instead of me sitting here half breaking my fingers to try and do that one thing. So we do that very rarely, but it happens, you know. But Andy has made an extra effort, which is great, to learn my style of playing. So he's incorporated my style and technique into his playing. And he actually started using some of that in his own writing. So that's really been helpful. But otherwise, it's... I played guitar in a band called Brainstorm at first. And then it broke up, and I had actually saved up for having a Marshall stack and a Gibson guitar. And I was looking for another band. I was looking at a grocery store where they had all these ads. Right when you walk into the store, they
sure,
had all
yeah.
these looking for
singers. Classified ads, like, yeah.
Yeah. And there was a band that said style, Rainbow, Deep Purple, looking for a singer. And I tried to sneak in as a guitarist/singer because I'd never sung before, but I wanted to see the band. And they didn't have a keyboard player, and yet they were playing that stuff. So the first rehearsal I came to, they said, we don't need a guitarist. We have a guitarist that we just want one. And I said, oh, okay, well, I'll just go out there anyway. And then we met, and what do we play? Let's try Space Strong. And like, what? Are you kidding me? I have never sung in my life.
And they wanted you to sing Space Truckin'.
Yeah, so I screamed so much that I guess I was the best screamer they had had so far, but I had no voice when I came home, practically, you know.
But you got the gig?
Yeah.
Were you able, so that was the first time you ever attempted to sing with a
yeah.
band?
Yeah.
And were you able to go up, I mean, you're known for your high falsetto. Were you doing that then, or did you even know that?
More screaming.
Screaming.
Yeah, but I found out myself the way to make it cleaner and nicer, you know, and And then we started to, we played more Purple. We got a keyboard player, you know, in the band, and Black Rose, it was called. And it started sounding quite a bit like Purple, Rainbow, our own songs. Some of it would sound a little bit like Alice Cooper, maybe, you know, because it was a horror style already at that point.
Already, that was what. Yeah, so, yeah. So was that, that's the next question I was going to ask, because you, at that point, were you King Diamond yet? When did you adopt the name Diamond?
Yeah.
You started calling yourself
at Brainstorm already.
Really?
Yeah. We
Where did the name come from?
I have no clue.
Did somebody give it to you, or?
No, I came up with it. We all thought we were going to be so big quick that we had to have artist names, because we had heard that you know, bands always had these
stage
English names. Yeah. And one guy was actually called Jes Jacobsen. They were like, you can't be called that. It's like, whoa, what's wrong? No, you need to be, what about Jesse James? It's like, and so he was Jesse James, and the guitarist was Mike West, and I was King Diamond, and I have no clue where I came from.
You just walked in one day and said, I'm going to be King Diamond.
Yeah. And I could tell people that, oh, of course I chose it because diamonds are forever and I'm still around. So, you know, but it would be a lie. So I have no clue.
That's amazing. Usually it would, I always wondered that, because usually it would come from something or a TV show or something that hit you. And
reality hit us quick in the face. But we had a booking agent that was absolutely worthless, you know, and he booked us at some of these places. Even when I joined Bratz. And then that became Merciful Fate. I remember the booking agent we had there. The first show we played with Merciful Fate ever was at a school where they had the like a party of the month or whatever it was, and it was a completely wrong booking. None of them were into heavy metal at all. And someday we'll probably release the tapes, because we have them.
Oh, wow!
And it's I remember you will hear me standing there talking to him. I got so mad because they were not into it at all, and they were just they got none of it, and it was like, what are you, a bunch of discos out there, what the hell are you doing, man? And it's words I can't say here, but
no, you can say them here.
Oh, why don't you just go fuck yourself and piss off, I don't want you fuckers in here. And then we had a trouble afterwards outside the show, and we ended up in a fight and all this stupid shit. That was Merciful Fate's first show ever.
Oh, my gosh.
Completely booked wrong, you know. We should never have been in that place.
From the get-go, from the very first show with Merciful Fate, was it always was the theatrical element always there?
Because the makeup was there, you know, the weird costume, you can say, had already started there. It started with Black Rose. I mean,
doing that in the band before.
Makeup was from Brainstorm was makeup. That was in 76 already at that time.
And what inspired you to go with makeup and a costume like that? I mean, what was the visual inspiration for you?
There's a couple of bands, but the absolute first one was when I saw Peter Gabriel and Genesis in 74. Mm-hmm. Played in Copenhagen, Falconer Theater, and they played the whole double album, The Landmark's Down on Broadway, and then they did another, I think, almost an hour and a half of Watcher of the Skies and the musical, but all the heavier songs from the early albums, and the way it was presented, all these different costumes and the makeup of Peter Gabriel, that was what absolutely blew me. If I was ever going to be in a band, we would have to have a show like that. And then the year after 75, I saw Alice Cooper, Welcome to a Nightmare, blew me away too completely, you know. So a lot of people thought it was Kiss, you know, but that was not what inspired me to do those things, you know. I liked Kiss back in those days, absolutely, you know. I saw their early concerts and all this stuff, but that was not where that came from. Genesis, you would probably not think of, but that's the first inspiration.
But no,
Peter
Gabriel was very theatrical as a performer.
Extremely, I mean, extremely, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. When you put on, when you talk about Kiss or Alice Cooper, or I don't know from Peter Gabriel's perspective, but I know from talking to people, the guys in Kiss and Alice, when you put on the makeup and you put on the costume, even to this day when you do shows, do you feel different? You don't, because sometimes they feel like they're almost, it's like a superhero going in and becoming a different, nothing changes.
No, not at all.
Your personality, nothing changes.
It happens at the hotel rooms, you know. I do it there because it's more relaxing, and then I stand and I listen to through the set that I'm going to go sing now. And then that's
so you prepare and you put makeup on and get into your costume in your hotel prior to getting to the gig.
Yeah.
And then you just get
arrive.
You don't call
minutes.
An Uber, do you? You dress like that?
I can tell you one thing. If they bring a limo, I refuse to go in. I don't drive in limos. That's something I don't feel right.
Doesn't suit you?
No, not at all. So, but yeah, that would be great.
But right? calling an Uber just like that. It's not Halloween. Who is this guy?
we had an incident once, now you talk about that, you know, where a cab was picking us up after a show in New York. This is like really crazy. The security guard was with me, of course. We had just left after having finished playing, and there was that
You're cab. Still in costume?
Yes.
Okay.
And the cab has been over. He doesn't want to let me in because he sees me. And the security guard sees people come out from the venue, and he gets, oh, God, he gets panicked. He gets in the front and says, you've got to open the door from the back. You open the door now, now. And then the guy said, no. And then he said to him, you do it now or I kill you.
The security guy
said that to the driver. And then he opened the door, and I got in. And he said, drive now, he told him. It was almost a kidnapping. Not quite, but technically close, you know. I say, you can't sit. You can't talk to people like that. Are you insane?
They threatened to kill him.
He was from Denmark. He didn't speak English so well, so he just went in panic there.
A security guy.
Yeah. And then he started driving, and then he called in all kinds of weird stuff, you know. I said, oh, God, we're going to be met by 15 cabs somewhere, and they're going to absolutely make an example out of us. But then I managed to explain to him, hey, it is not what it seems like here. Just let's all calm down.
Right.
I'm sitting there in makeup, sweating after a show, trying to calm this guy down because I don't want to be accused of having tried to
right.
kidnap a taxi driver. Oh.
What has been, and I promise the callers we're going to get to you in a second, but just a few more things from me. What has been some of the crazier circumstances you have found yourself in doing shows, whether it be with Merciful Fate or King Diamond? I'm sure you've dealt with protests, right? Have you dealt with people like protesting?
Yeah, very few, actually. Very few. Much less than you would ever think because most of it had been already made clear in interviews and stuff like that, what it's about and what it's not about. I mean, even the senator wives over here with the Filthy 15 list and all this stuff, you know.
Oh, the PMRC stuff.
Yeah.
You were on that, right?
Yeah. Into the Coven, Merciful Fate was on there, you know. I don't know what number it was, but there was only 15 songs, you know. And it was kind of like we were all like proud when we saw it in one of
good
the newspapers.
For business, sure.
Yeah, it's like, thanks. Oh, my God. We would never have gotten
that was the most coverage Merciful Fate would have ever gotten.
Absolutely. That probably got us the first tour with Motorhead over here. Who knows? So it's... afterwards, you think, why did they... They must have been bored to try to get into these kind of things and trying to see these weird things because they were the ones with the strange minds. They saw all these strange things that was not even in the lyrics. So
I know. I worked in a record store at the time, and I used to tell people all the time, I mean, whenever those records were highlighted, we'd sell more of them
because
it was more promotion. I thought that anything that had the sticker on it, that made the people want it more. So
absolutely.
I didn't... I would tell artists, don't even fight it.
Yeah.
You know, let it happen. It's the best promotion that you could possibly have.
Absolutely.
Before we take some calls from the audience, you'd mentioned about King Diamond DVD and that coming, working on a new studio record and that coming. Do you have any plans to do anything with Merciful Fate again in any way with any of the guys?
But I've always said that I would not be against doing it. You know, what it would take is... we have to have the perfect storm, kind of, you know, to make everything, all the stars have to align properly, then it might be possible to do something with Merciful Fate. But it's like, we are not there right now or anything like that, you know. But I still talk to Hank, of course, a lot about business. Merciful Fate is doing business still, of course. Metal Blade has just bought the entire old catalog, old Roadrunner catalog, which was owned by Warner. Brothers, you know, and they just bought the whole catalog. They now have the entire catalog for Merciful Fate and for King Diamond, which is a very interesting thing to work with for the future for publishing and other things like that that we have to start working on with management. You know, there's a lot of things to be put on the right rails so that we can start going in a proper, because we have a lot of things that needs to be fixed, which we didn't have the
from a business
knowledge.
Standpoint.
Yeah,
you're in a totally different world now because now there's the deals with streaming and all this sort of stuff.
Ooh, a very, very new subject, yeah.
Yeah. But it's interesting then because for fans listening, I think this is really that are fans of you, this is very exciting because it sounds like you've gotten on the other side of all the health stuff, thankfully.
Yeah.
Now you're feeling good. You've done that tour, which was so successful. I mean, you headlined huge events, big production. Now you've got behind the scenes very, very major representation in terms of management, something you never had.
Yes.
So those are all very important pieces that if you're a King Diamond fan to say, wow, the future's really bright because yes. we're really going to do some great things here.
Absolutely.
That you're going to fully get back into
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
So that's really good to hear. I'm sure fans are excited to hear that as well. So, and one last thing we should mention, a couple years ago, last time I had you on, you had just put that compilation together, right?
Yeah,
you did that
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
And I remember how much you worked on the mastering.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time told me you had these special, super high-end speakers.
Remember, yes.
We were talking on the phone. What are they called again?
Barefoot.
Barefoot.
I use them every day. I have Andy Ravok has the same exact pair in his studio, and I have them in my living room. And I also have a smaller pair in my studio room. It's unbelievable. I simply cannot say enough good about them. They are so 1,000% accurate, real sound. Exactly what
are you? Would you consider yourself to be an audiophile? Are you big into audio?
With that kind of stuff, yeah. I mean, and getting those speakers, Andy warned me before. I said, once we go here, you are never going back to anything else. You can't. It's impossible. If you ever lose them or something like that, you have to get another pair, though. You cannot do with anything else. They are that good. And that's what we're judging everything on, you know. And I'm going to also run the DVDs through that, but I'm not there at this point. I've been doing everything on a different system because I wanted to do a system that is closer to what everybody out and around are going to listen to it on, you know. So we know it sounds good wherever people play it. But the last test is that I put it up there too, you know, and Andy know. But Andy has mixed it together with a guy called Pontus Norgren, who's a guitarist for Hammerfall. He's also our live audio technician, and he mind-blowing. And he's done an amazing job together with Andy there. And I've been coming in later saying, hey, I think the guitars could come a little bit here, and the voice, you maybe a few more reverb delays here on this part. And, you know, coming with the last final comments to what I think. Because it's easier to sit with a big picture when you have not sat that close with it. And I tried to stay away from it this time with this video stuff, you know, and also with all the editing and stuff like that, where Denise, that's doing it from New York, is doing an absolutely amazing job. Like I told you that we have all these camera angles in there. There's really so many that people will be shocked when they see it.
Mm.
And for her to be able to do it the way she is doing it, I don't know how she did it.
Yeah, that's a big undertaking. When you've got that, that much footage to pick and choose from and cut, that's a lot to do. You're going to get it out this year. That's the point.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, like I said, Philadelphia Show is 95-98% done. And Grass Pop is 80% done, I would say, at least, if not further.
What was the biggest show you played on that last run? I know you headlined a festival in Vegas. I know you did the stuff in what was your personal biggest show or your favorite show you did on this last run of touring?
Oh, God.
Was there one that stands out?
Several of them. Both Grass Pop and Hellfest, the two that it's footage from, you know, was great shows. I mean, we played also Copenhagen. They were each great. Sweden Rock was great. Queen was there playing late night, and we played after them. Of course, they're a headliner. The same we played after Black Sabbath in Hellfest and Grass Pop, which was such a privilege, you know, because Sabbath played up till a little after midnight, and 12:30, we would go on and play for an hour and a half till 2 in the morning.
Wow.
And people stayed.
Sure they would.
And it was Black Sabbath, and we were standing on the one stage, same size as the one Sabbath is playing on, looking over to the other side where they are now going through a Paranoid, and we stand behind the curtain, of course, no one can see us, and it's like, I can't believe it. One of my absolute heroes are standing over there doing this, and we're going to play now. And we did that two times. And then Copenhagen had Scorpions that played on a Thursday, I think, headlined their biggest stage. We headlined Friday, And then Sabbath headlined Saturday, where I stayed. I was supposed to go home, but I stayed one extra day to see Sabbath there. And I saw it. I crawled up in their tower and saw it from up there. It was absolutely, I'll never forget it, you know. And then I saw them again in Dallas with their last show there. And again, they were absolutely fantastic. I mean, it was hot and humid, which is great for a singer's voice. And Ozzy sounded fantastic there. I mean, it was so good. Never forget it.
Great stuff. King Diamond is here with me. All right, I promised the audience they'd get to say hello to you. So you okay with a few phone calls?
Absolutely.
All right, we're gonna let you guys fire away at King Diamond, and we'll grab some calls for him right after this commercial break on the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, got some useful car tips you might not be aware of. Check this out. A coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. Removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage. And you can place your key fob to your chin to increase its range. Weird, right? Well, here's another tip you also might not know about. TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right. TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With a certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid, so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with the TrueCar certified dealers. So when you're ready to buy a new or a used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
Good news. For the first time ever, the Adam Carolla Show is in virtual reality. Live Saturday, April 21st. Just a one-time $4.99 subscription. And you can see it on your phone or your computer in virtual 360 reality. You don't need glasses, only a web-enabled device. Experience a live show from the comfort of your own internet. It's not going to air as a regular show, so you can only see it in person Saturday, April 21st, or buy the VR download and watch on your favorite device. Get it at podcastone.com/CorollaVR. podcastone.com/CorollaVR.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Let's get back to more of my conversation with King Diamond on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Ricky in Maryland has been waiting for over an hour to say hello to King Diamond. Ricky, you're on the air. Go ahead, man.
Eddie, thanks for the opportunity, brother. Hey, King, how are you, brother?
Doing good, man. How are you?
I'm doing a heck of a lot better now that I finally get to talk. Man, I love to death, man. I love you, brother. I've been a fan.
Thank you, man, so much.
35 years, man. Oh, my God. Wow. It's a total honor to talk to you, sir.
Thank you.
You're amazing. You're amazing. I wish I could say I saw you 35 years ago live. My first show was in Virginia at a little place called Jax. It was about 13 years ago. That was the first time I got to see you play live, and I've seen you a whole bunch.
I remember Jax, yeah.
Yes,
I remember Jax. Very low stage, right?
Yeah, it was. It was a very small place, actually. I think it maybe like 800 people, maybe. But, dude, that it was an amazing show. A lot of theatrical stuff. You not only do you sound like you're the coolest fucking sounding lead singer in the history of heavy metal. And not only that, you're the coolest looking fucking guy in heavy metal. And I just recently got a statue of you from this place called Knuckle Bones.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a low number. It's like 330 of 1777, I think. So that's my most recent. That was only like a week ago. So how cool is it? I just got that, and now I get to talk to you, brother. So thank you for the time. I don't want to take up too much more, but I'm sure there's other fans out there.
It was pretty nicely done, right? That statue, pretty good job.
Oh,
they did.
It's beautiful, sir. And you know what? I'm going to post it on Facebook today, and I'm also going to post this video of me talking to you as well. So it's
cool.
Great.
Wait till you put that statue next to your bed, you know, when you sleep.
I read that.
Oh, you read that?
I'm going to see some. Yeah, I read that on the.
You
back.
Might get some glimpse of the story from the next album.
Oh,
wait, what happens when you put the statue in the dark? What happens?
It might start inducing things into his head while he's sleeping.
All right, Ricky. Thank you, man.
Hey, take care, man.
Thank you for the call. This is Thomas, who is in Denmark. I don't know. We don't reach. Oh, wow. We reach U.S. and Canada. I don't know about Denmark, but Thomas, go ahead. You're on with King Diamond.
First of all, Eddie, thank you very much for having such an awesome guest on.
Cool, Thomas. Are you in Denmark King? Now?
Yes. I'm in Brunsøy.
Oh, wow.
And how are you hearing the show on an app or something, or?
Yeah, on the app.
Okay. I don't know how he's doing it, but I'm glad you're listening. Go ahead, Thomas.
Well, actually, I'm talking to you on Magic Jack, and it's working great.
Okay.
But anyways, also I'd like to say, King, glad you're doing great.
Thanks,
and tillykke med din nye børn.
Tak skal du have.
What is he saying? Translate.
Congratulations with your new kid, your newborn kid.
Oh, wow. Yes. Okay.
Yes. Hey, I did it. Hey, honey, I did it. I'm actually from Southern California, so
All right.
Strange.
All right, Thomas, we got a ton of calls. Get your question out. I know you're calling from Denmark, but get your question, please.
Two quick questions. King, do you have any plans on working with Mikael Poulsen from Volbeat? And... are you still in touch with Jonas Hansen from Silver Mountain?
Wow, that's interesting. No, I'm not in contact with Jonas, but man, I remember those days when the two brothers were in Silver Mountain there, and I heard their demo tapes back from, God, that was Merciful Fate, early demo days. And I remember I looked so much up to those guys at that time. They were really, really...
What was the band called?
Silver Mountain from Sweden.
Oh, okay.
Great band, man, back then. It was really, really cool. No, I have not talked to any of those guys. I don't even know if they are playing anymore.
And he mentioned if you were going to do anything more with Volbeat.
With Michael and Volbeat, I have no plans at the moment, you know, but the future is always open for anything, you know.
Tyler in Georgia. Hey, Tyler, how are you, buddy?
Hey, Ed. Hey, King. It's an honor to be able to congratulate you on your health and your baby. That's awesome.
Thank you very much.
My introduction to you was a friend of mine sat me down in his room, turned off the lights, lit a candle, and said, "Listen to this. Merciful Fate, Melissa, thank you for scaring the crap out of me."
he knew how to...
King has done his job then. His job has been done. Yes.
You don't know how many times I've done that to myself. Where I put a candle up, that's all there is, and I listen to old Coven or whatever it might be, these crazy, you know, the early Black Sabbath or all this stuff, you know, and it works great, man. It's a good, a very good mood changer.
Yeah. I saw you here in Atlanta at a place called the Tabernacle. I don't know, it was very fitting to see King Diamond at a converted church, of all places.
Yes.
So that was glad we all survived it. And my question is, what do you think of the band Ghost and what they're doing with the makeup and the satanic? What do you think of that band? And I'll jump off. Thank you again.
Well, I would say about Ghost that the last album, the third album they did, is half the songs there I really like. I think they're doing some really good stuff on half of those songs, you know, that where I, for my personal taste, of course, you know. The other songs, it's all done very professionally, you know, all the production people that are involved there is very, very highly skilled, you know. It took some time to... I have listened to the first albums too, you know, but... you know, everybody has different tastes, you know. I like it. Some people can compare a little bit to Merciful Fate sometimes, you know, and say it. But for me, you know, like you, Merciful Fate can barely start a song without there having to be a long guitar solo. It's this crazy whatever we do, you know, Merciful Fate. And that was not exactly the way that the Ghost approached their stuff. So, I mean, I don't hear Ghost being like Merciful Fate at all, which I am glad they aren't, because why would you want to be that? You know, you want to be yourself. And they're certainly creating something I think it's very, very respectful that they do things their own way and have created a very unique style and a completely different show than we do. We have nothing in common really with what the show is, except for there's makeup involved, I would say, you know. So, But it's great to see. I love bands that are putting on an extra show for the fans. I think that's always great. So I wish them all the best, absolutely. And I think they're doing fine. I mean, they're doing some good stuff. They have great management, too. I know that, too.
Let's talk to Mark, who's in Illinois. Hey, Mark, you're on with King Diamond.
The last time I talked to you, King, I was 18 years old. I was over 30 years ago at a station called Z-Rock, which you were responsible. Z-Rock. They used you as a poster child to get rid of that station in Chicago. Eddie might actually remember that.
Wait a minute. They used a picture of King Diamond for a reason that metal shouldn't be on the radio?
Yes. Z-Rock was a metal station in Chicago. It rocked, kicked ass, and then, believe it or not, it was really big in like 85, 86, 87. And then when King Diamond and they were just using it, was a whole PRC thing. And then he was the poster child in Chicago as to why that station was gone. And the Mormons bought it out, believe it or not. And it broke our hearts at the time. But
well, Z-Rock was a syndicated outlet. Z-Rock, I think, originated in Texas. I think that the very first where it broadcast from was, I believe, in somewhere here in Texas. And then it was syndicated out. So there was like affiliates. They would have 20, 30 stations. I remember in New York, it was on where I was. It was a super brief time, and it was on an AM station, which is terrible for hearing music, you know. And I do remember that, but it was based in Texas, if I'm not mistaken. And you just would have had an affiliate there in Chicago. It sounds like
I did several interviews. I think it was like 95 at the radio. I did several interviews at the radio stations, you know, and all the great people.
Yeah.
Booby Bondage was the wife of the guy that what was his name
I don't remember all the names, but
I mean, I remember first time I flew in here to do something and they picked me up. That's where I got the first real taste of Texas, you know, where they said, "Hey, how you all doing?" And it was just me standing there, and I was like, "Oh, look at all my
shoulder." There's nobody else around.
What are you? Okay, I didn't get that. Could you say that again?
How long have you lived here in Texas?
Oh, since 92.
Oh, a long time.
Yeah, a long time.
You should be saying y'all by now.
I know. I'm trying hard not to. I'm keeping my original Danish accent.
There you go. You still have that intact. Mark, go ahead with your question for King.
Real quick. You know what? I'll listen for the answer afterward. When you found guitarists like Hank and Mike, I mean, I'm going to tell you something. It's on the level of Queensryche. There was, you know, Slayer back in the day, and Megadeth, Metallica, but you were something so different. And I wanted to know, I take responsible for bringing you to the south side of Chicago, because when people heard you, oh, my God. But when you kind of changed directions. After you left Merciful Fate and you went on your own, and the demonic thing kind of went to more storytelling, and I'm kind of wondering, was that something you wanted to do? Was Hank and Mike not on board with that? And I'll listen for that after I hang up. And great talking to you.
All right, Mark, thank you.
All right. Well, you know, I wouldn't say they weren't on board with all that stuff, Michael and Hank. You know, they just, Michael Denner actually had parents that was into the occult and stuff like that, and he knew some stuff about it, but he was not always comfortable with it, you know. But with Hank, it was like, I think Hank is much more aware of it today than he was back then. It was strange and foreign for him, and not really something that he could relate a lot to. So he played his guitars but of course it affects everybody, you know, that are involved with it, because we did the craziest things back then, you know, when we started. We didn't have a lot of money. For instance, this one here, a guy that I still work with today, Ole Bang, he's a functioning tour manager. We used to take blood from his arm every time we played in the early days. When we had a show with Girl School that turned into some crazy thing, because we took that and we had goose feathers according to a ritual, you know, that was on the front of an altar that we have on stage. And I was putting, he actually took
his
own blood.
Your wife has her hands in her face just shaking her head right now.
He actually took his own blood, you know, with a needle and all this stuff. And then here's my blood, you know. And then
wait, you would take your tour manager's blood every gig?
Yeah, we didn't play that many gigs back then.
Guy would be
couldn't.
Guy would be shriveled up mess by the time the three shows in.
Yeah, actually, we still have him.
What did you do with the blood when you took it out of your tour manager's arm?
We had it in a little bowl on stage, you know, and then we took a...
Why not just use a prop?
It was still warm.
Well, you guys were that authentic that you actually wanted real blood?
Yeah, we did it. And we we're stenting you know, these this droplets onto these to try and get some.
Oh, so you were really going for you? You
yeah,
whatever. We,
yeah, yeah. It was not just.
It was. Oh, I see.
Feel like LaVey's style. It was the early days, you know, and something happened there. There was something happening in that place, and Kim Kelly from Girls School, actually, they were playing after. They were headlining a show. We were supporting them. They told us afterwards that it was so weird to see us play because there was something in there that they could not describe. And she got knocked down. She got an electric, not died, of course not, but she got electric shock from her microphone stand. She grabbed it in between songs. They had played one song. I was taking my makeup off in the dressing room, and this guy came in, the blood guy, you know, he came in and said, "Have you heard that outside? There were these noises coming through the PA." And then I don't know why I said it. It was strange, strange, strange. I said, "Just wait and see. They'll play one song, and then they're going to stop for the rest of the evening." I don't know why I came up and said that, but sure enough, there was, boom, you could hear the microphone stand fall over. Her boyfriend had come running in from the side. He was part of the crew and kicked the microphone stand off of her. She has later told me that she said, "I don't want to talk to anyone about it because it makes me feel like they think I'm crazy." But I'll tell you, Kingy. She told me at backstage at a festival somewhere, you know, and we sat and talked for a while. And she said that she had seen herself hang up under the ceiling in the concert hall.
Oh, my gosh.
Looking down on herself on the stage. She saw her boyfriend come running in, kicking it off, and then she flew back into herself. And she was in the hospital in Denmark the next day. We went in, and we found a bootleg album we bought for her as a gift. And when we came in there and gave it to her and talked to them and said, "Hey, man, we hope everything is cool and all this stuff." And on the radio the next day, the promoter was talking. And he was talking about the incident. The Danish police had come and measured all the electrical installations and all this stuff because they had foreign gear. Nothing was wrong. Nothing was wrong. And he ended up saying, "I don't know what was here yesterday, but there was something, and it should not have been here," he said. "And I hope it never happens again."
Oh, my gosh.
It was absolutely weird. We have it on tape at home. It is
on
it is,
video?
No, we have it on cassette audio. Tape. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's creepy stuff, you know, but she was okay and all this stuff, but we haven't done it since. We are not going to do it since. But, you know, you think some things sometimes, but I've always respected these things 1,000% and will always do it, you know. That's why I have a very natural relationship with the occult or the other side, whatever you want to call it, you know. And you know that too. From home, we have 4 spots in our house now that has these cold spots where.
What are they called? Cold spots?
Yeah, there's something there. You know, one of the things is probably an old SS officer. I think that we have in the house.
That you feel essentially a ghost of?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It sounds crazy. Now I have to explain this little story too. Then one Christmas, Livia's. Dad had gotten a special gift from Hungary he brought with him over because he knows that I am fascinated by Second World War, First World War II, but especially Second World War because my dad was in it and he was a freedom fighter in Denmark and was fighting the Nazis and all this stuff. So it's not like I'm a Nazi or anything like that, but he had brought from a farm in close to where you had a summer house outside of Budapest, he had bought a pair of SS officer boots that he wanted to give me as just like, you know, because I'm into this kind of stuff, not, you know, the war.
Right.
And he showed them to me. He said that everybody in that little village says that the farmer had killed the German officer, so he died in those boots. And what had happened was the officer had come when the Russians came to liberate in situation marks, Hungary. He wanted to flee, of course, the German officer. So he tried to go to a farm to get civilian clothes and get away. And then they say that the farmer killed him. The farmer says, "No, he didn't, but he had all his clothes and all that, and he's been selling it. And the only thing he had left were the boots that they say he died in." And so Livia's dad bought it, and he brought it to for Christmas and as a gift. So I have it. They stand in front of my fireplace now, you know. And you can see there are stamps inside Dr. Glockman that made them and all this stuff. You know, it's pretty unique stuff. That night at 2 a.m, there was so much noise from the living room in front of the fireplace. There's tile, like there's so much on top of it, all kinds of demonic little things, you know, that stand up there, figurines and stuff like that. it was like as if someone had swept the whole thing down and it landed down on the tile. So loud. I have a gun. I grabbed my gun. Livia's mom and dad was there and her younger sister. I grabbed the gun. We had one cat only. I saw her walk by magic, and so she had nothing to do with it. I grabbed the gun. I tried, okay, I got to clear the house. There must be someone in here. I go out. I see the sister standing in the hallway. I'm like, go back with the gun in my hand. She freaked out and ran back in, you know, and then I cleared the house. Lights strategically turned on so I could, you know, shoot first if there was someone there. There was nobody in there. There was nothing out of place. So I go up in the attic and take a look up there. Everything's fine. And we had snow that Christmas, so there was full of snow. So I went outside with a flashlight. I walked around the house. There were no footprints. There were nothing up on the roof. Nothing had happened. Everybody had been woken up by these absolutely monstrously loud racks, you know. And I just felt like, okay, I guess he made his announcement that he is here, you know.
Wow. So you feel that that being is still in your house now?
Absolutely, yeah.
You're just okay with that? That's just the way it's got to be?
Yeah, it's the way it's got to be. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's heavy.
You can't say that the guy might, he might not have been a bad guy, you know. He could have been one that actually saved several because of his position. Who knows? I don't know anything about it. But Mike Failey, actually, from Middleweight Records, he's very much into this too, and he has a lot of connections. He told me once that, hey, you should give me these serial numbers that's on there. I can check it for you. Because I don't want to sit there and search on Nazi stuff on the internet because I'm not into that.
So. Right. Fascinating. Wow. Let's talk to Ronnie, who's in Oklahoma. Go ahead, Ronnie. You're on with King Diamond.
Hey, new caller, new listener.
Hey, Ronnie, you got a real bad phone connection, so get your question out because we don't want to lose you.
Oh, hey, I'm a new caller, and King Diamond, I just want to ask a question. How did you get that lawsuit against you about Gene Simmons saying that you copied his makeup? And personally, to me, your makeup didn't really look like his.
Oh, it never turned into a lawsuit either. You know, it was presented to the record label that they did not want us to. There was the makeup from them, actually. So it didn't look very much like anything like that. But it was a time where Kiss had dropped the makeup, I think, you know. So it was a time where I don't think Kiss did as well without the makeup as they had done with it on, you know. And they went back getting the makeup again, which was probably a smart thing, I think. But at the time, you know, it could have been a publicity stunt or something like that because it certainly got a lot of publicity. But it was never really a problem, you know. The funny thing is that at the time when that came in, I saw the actual trademarks that they have on the makeups from the first album. And I would say that a three-year-old kid could have seen the difference, you know. But it never became an issue because at that time, you know, we had Conspiracy album coming out. And we were working on a different cover, but it went wrong. There was a very complex process with that cover, the original cover. It could have been fantastic, but it didn't work. And we had a tour coming up, and the record label said, we need this album out. You cannot start touring without the album. We have to have it out. Let's put a picture of your face on. I was like, what? That's not a real cover. So I was not even for that at all. They said, there is no other way. Do it. And that makeup was already planned for the next tour to be that makeup for Conspiracy. So that became the cover, and suddenly then the record label said, so what about this makeup? Is that cool if we change it to that? But I never changed it, you know. It was already there. So it was kind of like sometimes Gene has said that, oh, yeah, he changed it because I said, it doesn't matter, you know. I mean, I have nothing against him.
Did you ever talk to Gene Simmons about it?
No.
No.
But it's never bothered me. It's never been a problem.
I never saw I'm a huge Kiss fan. I never saw any similarities to it at all.
It's like, you know, but also if you want to sue somebody, you've got to make sure, of course, that there's not others, Peter Gabriel, as Cooper.
Right.
There's so many that had used it back by that time, you know, the early 70s, late 60s even.
One more quick call here, and then I think we got to wrap it up. Ryan in Florida. Go ahead, Ryan.
This is sort of a trivia question that has nothing to do with rock music, so forgive me for asking, but I'm dying to know. My question for King Diamond is, what is the best movie you've ever seen?
The best movie? That's an interesting question, because I'm sure that would play into some of your music and make an influence. What's your favorite movie?
The Shining.
The Shining.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
I like it a lot because there's so much psychological. There's so many twists in it that I found all kinds of different explanations for, you know, who is this person really? Who is that person? There was a lot of twists there. And you pretty much had to go look for an explanation to find out what was really going on, you know, behind all the what you actually saw.
Yeah. Well, listen, I can't thank you enough for taking the time here to join me today.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
It was I could do this, come here once a month and do the show. Great setting that we're doing it at.
It's fantastic.
Great guest. It's been fantastic. Awesome. So I appreciate you coming
I'll
by.
I'll be here next time, too, if you want.
Yeah, and let me, well, we'll do something more when the DVD's ready, right?
Absolutely.
So we'll ready for that.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're going to be doing a lot of cool stuff coming up now that you've got all these pieces in place.
We have plans have been set now for the next 3 years, actually.
That's awesome. Yeah. Awesome. And congratulations on your son to both
thank
of you.
Thank you so much.
And most importantly, your health, man. You look great. I'm glad you're doing
you
so well.
Much.
Well, thanks to King Diamond on the Eddie Trunk podcast this week. Thanks to the Guitar Sanctuary McKinney for hosting me. Thanks to King for making the time to come over and sit in on the show. I hope you did enjoy that interview. Remember, the Eddie Trunk podcast is new every Thursday, podcast1.com and iTunes. Remember, when you shop on Amazon, be sure to do it on my page. Start at amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk. Check that page, see what I got in store for you there. Do all your shopping from that page on the rest of the site. Again, amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk. Also, be sure to read my website, updated all the time, music news as well. It's all there for you at EddieTrunk.com and at EddieTrunk, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You guys have a great week, and I'll see you next Thursday for another episode of the Eddie Trunk podcast, free, as always, podcast1.com and iTunes.
True crime series, Murder Made Me Famous, is now on Podcast One, showcasing some of the most notorious crimes imaginable, including Scott Peterson, Jody Arias, Ted Bundy, and more. See how murder made them famous. New episodes starting every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, as well as PodcastOne.com and the Podcast One app. And check out the new season of Murder Made Me Famous, starting Saturday, April 14th on The Reels channel.